This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Tom and Jess on Joy.
My favourite politician from Victoria is here, Miss Fiona Patten.
Good morning. Happy decade. Happy new decade.
Happy new decade. How was your Christmas? Let's start there. Did you have a break?
Look, I sort of. I was just saying to Andy, I my family was caught up in the fires and then my property was caught up in the fires. So it was kind of a tense time and I spent a lot of time refreshing fires near me over it and the Windy app to see where the wind was coming from. So, yeah, it was a lovely break, but, you know, it had, you weren't concentrating on relaxing, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, look, New Year's was
talking about fires, we have had quite a few messages in, and we will say straight up, we seem as a state to have handled this catastrophe quite well. We can always learn and do better.
Yeah,
and talking about problems, but if, you know, we've actually got people on the ground. We've been
That's
able
right.
to bring the Navy in. We've done things.
Look, our first responders and our CFA have just been extraordinary. And I have to say, I spoke to the Emergency Services Minister just before Christmas, and I said, "Well, what's this looking like for you?" And she said, "We are ready and waiting."
Yep.
We are ready and waiting. And when you think other emergency service ministers went on holidays in other states, I mean, what are they thinking going on holidays at Christmas time?
Well, correct. Mm. I mean, if you're in charge of bushfires, go on your holiday in July.
That's right.
When it's cold and wet out there.
Well, March even,
March. Yeah. Well, look, we have had, like I said, a lot of emails. And I wanted to want to say we are going to ask you this question, and it's come from one of our listeners. And it's basically, I'll just give you a bit of a summary. He's fifth generation farmers, and he talks about the influence of heat. Also talks about some stuff which I'm not going to bag, but going to say that grazing and burn-off stopped the fires. Well, we won't go there. But the question actually is, can you ask Fiona why she voted to scrap the 37-cow alpine grazing trial in 2014 that was designed to scientifically measure and assess the impact of grazing of feral animals and feed competitions, the environmental impact on the flora and fuel reduction? Says here that you were the casting vote, which I do remember. Yes,
yes, I was the casting vote, and I think.
Can you explain that to people who don't know?
That's right. Yeah. So there's 40 MPs in the Legislative Council, and for anything to pass, it needs 21 votes.
Mm-hmm.
So in
called
this
democracy.
That's right. And in this circumstance, we had the coalition voting against that bill. We had the Greens voting for the bill, and the government needed, two more votes, and I was one of those votes. And whether I was the casting vote or the second last casting vote, probably a moot point, but I don't go back on that decision, and I don't think we needed another trial. We know the damage that having those cows up in the alpine were having on the properties, we're having on the wildlife, we're having on the undergrowth that is so important to keeping fires out of alpine areas. And as someone whose property backs onto an alpine area of Kosciuszko National Park, I know very well the mosses and the lichens that hold the moisture up in our alpine areas that stop it from burning, that get trampled when you have brumbies, but also when you're grazing that area, and that they ruin a lot of that ecosystem and they actually make us more prone to fire. So I stand by my position, and I think we had years of research. Scientists came and spoke to me, and they had I believed the evidence.
Yeah. Well, actually, well done. So, that's part of your job is to basically go in there open-minded and actually listen to people who know more than yourself. And that's what makes a great leader in politics. You don't know everything.
And I suspect I did speak to this listener. And we had a few very reasonable conversations about this, and but I did. I spoke to experts, I spoke to people from all sides of it, and I thought that the evidence really weighed up in favour of stopping grazing in these most delicate ecosystems of our country.
And one thing I did notice when I was in Corryong was that a lot of people that have been fifth generation, they believed it was never going to happen, and they think their lived experience is bigger sometimes. Yep. I know that I'm not trying to put anyone down, because I'm sure lived experience obviously has a huge part, but they all, everyone I spoke to, did not think that the town would ever get the way it did. And it's because they had had five generations of living there and it had never come before. Mm-hmm. So why would we be so, why was it going to happen this time? Yep. Because the bushfires always happen, is what they kept saying. This is just every year happens. We're just carrying on a bit more because of media. That is not true. Mm. And we all, I think there was a lot of people eating, you know, like, you know, there was definitely some words being ate once they realised that it was not the same and we're not in the same position. And that maybe the scientists are more right.
That's right. And, you know, the cattle do not reduce fuel build up. That's just an absolute furphy. But
I saw a lot of dead cattle on the way back, and they were absolutely not protecting anything.
It's absolutely devastating. It's devastating for those farmers that have just spent the last 5 years keeping that cattle alive through this drought.
Mm. And you've been paying a lot of money to feed them.
I'm heartbroken for so many of those farmers and the communities around those farmers. Yeah. And this is probably going to take a generation to get over. It's going to be difficult.
So people who have been affected by the fires, that have lost their property, their cattle, their livelihood, what is our state government doing? I mean, I'm worried. I mean, I see at the moment we just keep talking about this person's, you know, bought $33 million, you know, this person's given us one, this one's... where's the money going? Because, like, is there things out there that our state government's doing? Do the people know where to go looking for help?
Look, I understand, and I think quite rightly, a lot of the money has just been given straight to the Red Cross, who has got the infrastructure, has got the networks on the ground to ensure that that assistance gets out in a quick and fair way. But what we're going to see from the federal government, I think the Victorian government and the Premier have actually negotiated very well with the federal government, and I hope that continues. And I hope that the federal government stands by the commitments that they have made, as well as the state government stands by the commitments that they have made.
Yeah. Yep.
And this is going to be where, I guess, the rubber hits the road right now, when the money is starting to go out. But this is going to take years. I mean, some communities aren't going to even be able to know what to do with the money right now. Yep. It's going to be when they're rebuilding their fences, and they may not want to be doing it now because the fire season has only begun.
Well, you are right. It's not the time to go.
Tom, you ask the bigger questions, and I love just sitting here and watching you two.
Well, you're right. Look,
I learned so much from this
group. We could go on about fires forever because
absolutely. I was watching a catastrophic fire coming over, looking at the fires coming in, and I would have stayed and fought the embers, but my partner just said he would have none of it, and we had to get out on the Friday.
Well, I'm glad that you are here, but there's something else that I have actually seen. Here we go. A thing called God TV.
I know.
Oh, this is...
It actually has me very concerned, because I'll let you explain it, because you'll probably do it better than myself, but basically evangelists, people are going out there and setting up satellite TV in Indigenous communities, and basically... now they're trying to say that they're doing this wonderful work and they should be getting more money for it, or...
They are going out there on tax-free money in these so-called missionaries. I think one's called the Chariots of God missionary.
Yeah.
When I went and had a look, I tried to look them up on social media, they've got one follower. I think it's the guy that calls himself the ministry. But they will have charitable status. So they've been raising tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars and then going out to the poorest and most remote communities and putting up a satellite that has 24/7 evangelical sermons that call for donations, that, you know, that sort of American happy clappy stuff. It's quite appalling. They then put out, they then said that they were stopping suicides.
What?
In Aboriginal communities, that God TV was preventing suicides.
And where did they get that study from?
To be able they to made make that, that up. Claim? They made that up. They actually made that up, and they had to actually admit that in actual fact the statistics did not bear that out, and there had been no reduction in tragic suicides in some of those remote Aboriginal communities. They were very proud about the number of people that they had baptised. So they were going out there and proselytising and, you know, putting up some thousands and thousands of dollars worth of satellite equipment so people could not get educational programs, not get children's educational programs, but get American evangelical programming.
What do they think they're doing? What are their side?
They're trying to convert people to their evangelical religion. I don't think there's anything else that they're trying to do. They might say that this is addressing suicide and alcoholism by ripping people away from their traditional spirituality. Yeah. I can't see that any evidence shows that that is the correct way to go. We know when our First Nation brothers and sisters have a closer relationship with their culture and with their history and with their land, that they are much more likely to be more resilient. So this is doing the opposite. And it's...
All people are like that, Fiona. When you have protect, when you have a house, a family, a connection to your community, regardless where we are, we all live a better life.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And so, look, I think it's appalling. And, you know, they used to be able to just drop Bibles off, but as they even say in some of their press literature, well, a lot of those people couldn't read the Bible, so it's much better we give them television.
What?
You know, one woman ended up donating thousands of dollars and she was on a pension because she didn't fully understand what, you know, what was she doing.
It's the religious version of Danos Direct and it's just on constantly. Yep. Oh, my goodness. Yep. It's so ridiculous.
So it's so ridiculous and I just think it's appalling and I... You know, these are the types of charities that we should be investigating.
Well, they're you know, exploiting.
And, you know, is that really worthy of charitable status to go out there and promote religion? You are not you are not helping education. You are not helping health. No. You are not helping in any way. You are proselytizing, and that is still under our laws, a tax exempt activity.
Well, we need to have a look at how that's going to happen, but unfortunately that's a federal issue, is it?
Well, it's federal and state. I mean, I've tried to do some work on this at a state level and I will continue to do this, but you're right. It really, it does have to change at a federal level, although we could do things about land tax for religious organisations that aren't using that land for charitable purposes, that might be using it for commercial purposes. There's things we could do in Victoria that may also start nudging the federal government to reconsider.
Well, let's
look, as it's always important, if anybody is not feeling the best and needs to talk to someone, there's always Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636, as well as there's a suicide callback service on 1300 659 469. We don't want anyone out there at this stage to be scared and lonely and not doing the right thing. And
yeah, we know that family brings resilience. We know knowing who you are and being able to be who you are gives us that resilience and protects us.
And we've noticed that during the fires, we all have come together and we've raised a lot of money and we've done a lot of things. We've just got to make sure now we don't waste it.
Stuff it now.
Forget about it.
And that governments keep their commitments.
Yeah.
Oh, Fiona, it's so lovely to have you.
Thanks,
I'm so
Jess.
Happy
it's
so
nice to be
here. That's why we have
here.
You up there at Spring Street.
Wake up with Tom and Jess, Thursdays on Joy Breakfast. Tune in to 94.9 in Melbourne, stream live at joy.org.au or download the Joy app. Find all our podcasts at tomandjessradio.com or subscribe on iTunes or Spotify.
Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them.
Thanks for listening to another Joy Podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.